Welcome to Inside Line with me, Chris Moss. This time round, I've got Build Base Suzuki's BSB riders, Danny Kent and Christian Idden. Welcome, lads.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Tell me, this racing lark, it's all about glamour, champagne, big money, only working weekends. Is that how it is?
It does seem like from the outside that we work 11 weekends of the year. And, you know, you get paid for it and you get to race your motorbikes. All that is absolutely true.
Dream job.
Dream job, except for it's not. It's 365 days of the year. It's non-stop. It's always in your head. It's something you can never sort of rely on or relax upon. Your job's never secure. You're only ever one race away from getting the boot, or you're always in under pressure. You know, it's not like you can rest on your laurels no matter how good you think things are going. So, yeah, racing for me has given me everything, but it's also took a lot away, you know, all the way through being a youngster. You sort of miss out on a lot of things that your friends are doing that you sort of want to go and, you know, do.
Talking about some of the downsides of racing, one of them is getting hurt. And you're back from injury, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, you crashed at Donington, you broke your femur or the top of your... You dislocated your hip with other complications. Tell me a story about that, Donington.
Yeah, so it was a dislocation of the hip and a multiple fracture of the acetabulum.
The acetabulum, yeah. What's that? Is that the ball or the socket?
Yeah, sort of like around the ball area where it sits into the socket. So where it dislocated, it sort of broke the back of the socket off. Up till then, I'd been very fortunate in my career to not have a big crash and have a big injury. So that was my first actual operation.
So you're in a lot of pain by the side of the track. It's a pretty serious injury. It keeps you out of racing for a long time. You spend a lot of time in hospital and rehabilitating.
Yeah.
Are you at any point thinking, let's stop this, I need another job?
No, honestly, in my head at the time, when I was led at the side of the track and being transferred to hospital, I told myself, that's it. But as soon as I came round from the first operation where they put it back into place and the pain was gone, I just wanted to ride the bike already. So it was just during the where it was dislocated and the leg was sort of stuck over the other side of my other leg. Yeah, I was telling myself that this is it.
Christian, you'll have broken the odd bone or two. Take me through some of your worst injuries and the sort of feelings you had at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you always try not to sort of look into them too much, but as it's part of the job, you know. He was telling me the other day about how that was the first time he's had a major injury, and that's pretty incredible in the career that he's had. So, although he went pretty big when he did do it.
he was saving them all up, wasn't he?
Yeah, like for me, it's been a little bit the opposite. I've had loads of, not little injuries, but I've had injuries that I can ride with. So I've had a couple of leg breaks that I've been able to ride through. I've had a collarbone go a couple of times that I've still been able to ride through. So it is part of what we do, you know. It's a dangerous sport, although the technology involved in the leathers that we wear and the helmets that we have now is pretty incredible. But yeah, it's crashing's part of it, and if you crash enough times and every now and again you're going to get hurt. Everyone's always managing some kind of injury throughout any part of racing. No motorcycle racer is ever really 100% fit. They've always got something going on in the background. So it's just, it's more about managing those things than anything else.
Is that sort of psychological barrier when you're recovering much more difficult to deal with than the actual injury itself or the pain from the injury? You know, just dealing with the fact that I've got to get better and I'm going to get back on this 220 horsepower motorbike and possibly do it again. Is that a tough bridge to cross?
I think, like, as Danny just said then, about at the moment when you do it, you know, when all the pain's there, it's horrendous and you're like, why do you do this? Why do you put yourself through it? But that's amazing how quickly you forget. That's the best thing. It is very mental. As much as most injuries are physical, it is a mental challenge to get over that. But once you set yourself a goal and a target to be back or where you need to be and a date for which you're trying to do that, then you know, you can take a lot from that, and you know.
Now, we've all decided early on that it's not quite as glamorous and as sort of reward laden as a lot of people think it is. What about some other downsides of the job or bits about it that you don't care for so much? What about all this PR stuff that you have to do? I mean, look, Casey Stoner, an amazing rider, had to retire from the sport simply because he was a guy who just wanted to race the bikes and he didn't like all the nonsense that went with it. What do you feel about that sort of stuff, Danny?
To be fair, I've always been quite happy with PR. You know, I knew growing up, watching the TV and all, I knew that's part of the job anyway, so, you know, you sort of drum that into your head. It can get hard sometimes, especially after, I don't know, maybe a bad practice or a bad race weekend, and then you've got to go straight into doing interviews where you're not really that motivated to talk about a bad weekend. But no, it's part of the job.
You, Christian, are you happy with all the PR duties and the press and the pressure from the media?
Yeah, it is part and parcel of it. I mean, the funny thing with it is, and probably with regards to the Casey Stoner thing, is whenever anyone gets into motorbike racing, it's not in order to be professional at it, really. You know, you never start out as a kid and go, you know, I'm going to be a professional. You know, when you're 6 years old, you don't really think that far ahead. You just want to go and ride your motorbike. And if you're good at it, then over time you become fortunate enough that it becomes your job. So at that point, all these extra things come into it. So it is part and parcel of it. I'm personally not very good at all that sort of thing, but I know it's part of what we do. So I don't mind it. I'm just not very good at it.
Was it more fun at the beginning then, when it was just for fun and it wasn't professional and there weren't pressures, you know, the club racing days and the early stuff at national level? Was that more fun than it is now? Is it too serious now?
It's hard to say, really, because when you're a young age, so you look at life and look at different things differently. So, yeah, no, it was all new. Like, when I was racing, the sort of first 4 years of my race career, I didn't know anything about MotoGP or World Superbikes. So I just, the way I fell into racing was I went to a local go-kart track to hire a go-kart and I ended up hiring a Minimoto. None of my family's involved in racing at all. So I didn't know anything about any famous motorbike riders. So I was just riding for fun and then ended up winning races and going.
What an amazing story. So you started bike racing by accident?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, it was literally went to a local go-kart track, which was 10 minutes from where I live, and just rode a Minimoto. First time you ride one, you're meant to follow an instructor. And I was overtaking him on the first go and the instructor said to Dad, maybe you should buy him one. So for Christmas, we got one and yeah, that's where the journey started.
What about you, Christian? What got you kicked off in the first place? How did you fall into racing? Or was it because your father did it and he was a factory Suzuki rider and you were in the paddock from an early age?
Yeah, exactly. That very different to Danny's story. I've never heard that. That's pretty amazing.
It's an absolute beauty.
That's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, mine's a bit more of the standard story. You know, my dad was a racer. He tells me he was pretty good at it.
He was good.
So he says.
He was good. Listen to the lad.
So, yeah, it's a bit like anything, really. If your parents are into football, then you end up getting a ball. And I got a motorbike because that's what my dad was into. So I spent loads of my youth, not that I remember, but from day dot, I was doing the world championship, but I was traveling around with my mum and dad, doing all the championships he was doing. And from really early on, I got a motocross bike and you started out from there, really. The standard sort of route that you would normally take.
Are you each happy with how it's gone thus far, apart from the odd downsides, obviously, but...
Yeah, in a way. Like, looking back, this is hindsight, let's say. When you look back, there's a lot of things I'd change. But, you know, I'm happy with the person I am today and the way my career... Well, we could talk about it all day.
Please do.
Obviously, I wanted to go in other directions. I look back now and probably I'd say my biggest... mistake was not signing for Pramac when I had the chance to go straight from Moto3 to MotoGP. Looking back, that was my biggest mistake because the problem was at the age of 21, the offer that I had to go to MotoGP was a 3-year deal, but over that 3 years I was earning so much money, but the offer that I got to go to Moto2 was a 6-figure number just for the 1 year. And with no management at the time and a 21-year-old lad, and you see that kind of money, it was hard for me to turn down. But looking back, it was probably the worst decision I ever made in racing.
Let's talk a bit about riding a GSXR 1000 on track, a super bike. That production bike behind us is not a slow animal, but your bike would just blow that into the weeds. Tell me what it feels like riding this thing. You know, how physically demanding is it? How difficult is it to set up? You know, is it an easy bike to ride fast or totally different to that?
Well, it's pretty well known that they say the Suzuki Superbike is the closest thing to, let's say, a sort of a 600 super sport bike. It's very agile, round, it's fast and flowing. It handles really well. But yeah, with the nature of the BSB rules and the BSB UK tracks, let's say, and the power that these bikes deliver now, you can imagine that it's definitely hard work on the body to muscle them around. So yeah, no, it's hard. I'd say now in racing, I think that most of the job, or a lot of the job, comes down to how your physical, how strong you are, how fit you are. Yeah, maybe you can do one fast lap. If you're unfit, but then when you've got to do 20 fast laps on one of these, you just can't make it to the end.
Tell me a bit more in detail about what the most strenuous parts of it. Is it the braking? Is it the acceleration? Is it steering it through the likes of corner curves? I mean, do you have to put a lot of bicep power into getting this thing to change direction?
I think for each rider it's a bit differently, because there's riders which ride more on their legs, and then there's riders which use their arms more. I'm a rider which I need to try and work on actually in changing, because I use my arms to change direction instead of my legs. And obviously everyone knows your legs are a lot stronger than your arms. So
after the race, can you feel some effort in then?
Oh, 100%. Through your arms? Yeah, it gets so annoying when people ask you why you have to train to ride a motorbike. You're just sitting on a bike, but they couldn't be more wrong. But, you know, like, we have to sort of maintain a 170 to 180 heart rate for 35, 40 minutes, which is not easy.
Christian, what do you do to keep fit then?
I do quite a lot, to be fair. I take it quite seriously. It's something that over time I've become more and more almost obsessed with. So I do quite a lot of road cycling now, which is something that I got into a few years back when someone just gave me a bike, and then to be honest, I thought it was a bit weird. I wasn't really into road cycling. I've seen all them lycra weirdos, and then, don't know, over time I've become a lycra weirdo. But yeah, I do loads of different stuff. I do some quite fast-paced stuff to try and replicate riding the motorbike. As Danny said, you have to maintain a really high heart rate. And it's kind of strange, the physicality of these bikes. You know, you said that our race bikes would blow the socks off a standard one. Sort of they would, but more or less they're just made a lot more sort of like a tighter feeling bike. So the superbike's a lot more rigid. Doesn't necessarily put out a load more power than a standard bike would, because especially with the nature of the British tracks, what happens is we don't necessarily need any more power. What actually we need to do is manage the power. So it's not always that we have a load more power, but what we do have is a much stiffer, the chassis is the same, but all the components around it, they make the bike feel a lot more rigid. So it's a much harsher ride. I know that every time when I go into free practice one of any weekend, even if I'd raced the weekend before, I hate my bike no matter what.
Because Why?
You just have no sensation from it. You might only be half a second off the pace of what you're going to achieve that weekend, but that half a second means you can't feel a thing. You know, it's horrible.
No feedback.
Yeah.
Does it feel edgy? Yeah. It might go at any second.
If you don't ride those bikes on the limit or to the limit, then they're very hard to get any sensation from. Once you ride them at the limit, they give you a lot more back. And actually, the more that you work with the bike and flow with it, actually the less physical it becomes. If you can flow with your bike, then it is easier. But I was laughing then because Danny was saying about how he uses upper body more, and I've always been the same. You know, I'm very strong upper bodied, and I overuse the upper body, which I've always been trying to get out of.
Which tracks are the most physically demanding on a BSB bike?
For me personally, it's got to be Alton, because you're constantly, there's no long straights, you're from corner to corner, it's quite bumpy, you just never really get a rest, especially with the power of these bikes that they're delivering, and one in the wheelie, you're on the rear brake, braking, change of direction. There's not really much time for you to, we sort of class the straights as our rest period. And obviously, yeah.
So Snetterton's better than Alton
in
that
respect? It is, yeah. I'm still yet to learn. I haven't done many laps around Snetterton, because obviously the pre-season testing for last year was raining all 3 days. And then obviously he couldn't race there because of the injury.
Can you feel fatigue during the race then, or the second race particularly? Say, you know, in fact, in some weekends you've got three races. Are you starting to feel a bit worn out in race three in the later laps, or are you fit to go and do six if need be?
In all honesty, for me, it's probably more whether if I can run the pace and I feel comfortable on the bike, then the bike's a lot easier to ride and you don't feel fatigued really. If you're hanging apart, then physically you start to hang apart. You know, you can't underestimate how much the mental side of things takes it out of you. So like Danny said before about heart rates, I really struggle to replicate the heart rate during exercise that I do on the bike, because you've got so many other factors that are influencing your heart rate. So when you're racing, you know, you've got all the adrenaline pumping, you've got such a huge amount of concentration that my heart rate goes way beyond anything that I could ever achieve. If I sprinted flat out, I couldn't get to the heart rate that I get to whilst racing the motorbike, even though sprinting flat out is probably more physically demanding. If you're struggling for pace, and it's funny, if you can be sat in a group sometimes in the race and you feel comfortable and everything's fine. And I kind of think of it as my spidey senses, you know, like when Spider-Man becomes Spider-Man or whatever it is, and time slows down. And if you're feeling comfortable, to me, everything comes, you can think one step ahead. You know, if you're in the group, you can work out what people are doing. You know, you've sort of got time. You'll never see that on TV, but you can, when you're in the pack and you know that's happening, that's great. You could have another race where you're in exactly the same group of riders. It might be one race to the next, but you're just fighting tooth and nail to stay within that group. And at that point, to me, it's as if I've lost my spidey senses and everything's coming at me quicker than I can. You're almost reacting to it rather than preempting things. So it's a very different way around racing. And it's funny because on TV, you might be in exactly the same pack of riders in a separate race. One of them you're hanging apart, and that's when you get fatigued because you're just doing everything you can to stay in that group or to stay ahead of whoever it is. Whereas in another race, you're completely in control. Your breathing's right, which is a big thing of it. Because it sounds daft, but honestly, you can forget to breathe at times. It's a big difference. And it doesn't look it from the outside, but some races you're just trying to stay in whatever pack it is that you're trying to stay ahead of or in front of or whatever it is. And other races, it's easy and it comes naturally. So for me, that's when the fatigue can set in.
Tell me about some of the sort of emotions you feel during the race. I mean, you know, if you have a near miss or somebody does a bit of a number on you, is it important to try and manage your emotion rather than getting a bit cross or over-determined or too scared? You know, is it easy to remain level-headed if you need to?
No, for me it is. It's hard to say really, because in a race you're in some kind of zone that I don't think, no matter what you can do in life, you'll never be in that same kind of zone. It happens naturally. Even if you run wide, you're not, and you're constantly thinking, like Christian just said then, when you're in a pack, I could relate. Then sometimes you're in a pack, and it's happening smooth. And this all comes down to how comfortable and how well you've got your bike set up for that individual track. There's been times where it's coming easy, and then everything's coming easy. Your heart rate's a bit lower, so then you're thinking about what this rider's doing, trying to prepare maybe three laps later because you're seeing where he's stronger than you, where I'm stronger than him, where you're going to pass him, and vice versa. I wouldn't say you have emotion when you're riding, would you, Christian?
No, I don't think you do.
What about if somebody does a number on you, though, and do you get angry and do you want to get them back?
Personally, I don't get angry, because the trouble is, it's a funny thing, because you have to manage emotions anyway, because you have to have the right amount of aggression that you're going to be forward thinking and make moves and not be the... You do want to be the aggressor. You know, you don't want to just roll over and let people sort of duff you up. But then if you also have too much aggression, you know, you're going to make mistakes. And so that's really about finding a happy medium. There's no point getting road rage with people. You know, that's not going to fix anything. You're better off having a headbutt in the pits than anything else. Well, do you know what I mean?
So you get them eventually. You get them back
well,
eventually.
Well, no, you just remember things, that's all. And everything always comes around at some point. So, yeah, as long as you keep that in the back of your mind. But, yeah, I don't think it's ever done anyone any good getting sort of overly aggressive or trying to retaliate on track. You do, you might, if you make a pass back on someone, you might just run them a foot wide. But that's all that you need to do. You know, it's you don't need to do any more. And I think with motorcycle racing, I've been around car racers, and they have, for me, they have a much lower level of respect for each other. Mm. And I think that probably stems from the fact that there's a much less of a safety aspect. Mm-hmm. Whereas as us as bike racers, I think even if I bore a grudge against someone on track, I wouldn't be able to put them in a dangerous situation, because we are genuinely in dangerous situations and you could hurt someone quite easily.
I mean, in saying that, there must be riders with a bit of a reputation for being a bit hard and maybe unfair at times.
Yeah, there absolutely is. But as I said, at some point that'll always come round. Yeah, there's definitely riders that you prefer to be around and others that you don't. And it's not always that obvious, because sometimes I don't mind a bit of bar banging as long as it's in the right place. There's certain scenarios where, although it might appear dangerous, it's less dangerous. But then there's some riders that'll take your bars in the wrong place.
Now, you talked about bike setup being important to make the race more manageable and less physical and less sort of traumatic in a way. How many things can you adjust on these things, and how crucial is it to get it right, and how bad is it when you've got a horrible ill handling or giddy motorcycle?
Like Christian was saying, with a superbike, it's a lot of a rigid bike is quite hard. So, and then with a stock bike, it's built, and let's say the swing arm is a lot softer, and it also makes the bike easier to ride, which for a rider, you want that. You want an easy bike to ride, but that doesn't mean it's the fastest way around the track. Mm. On the superbikes, there's loads of different things you can change. I'm still getting my head around it myself. Obviously, like with last year, I only did the first four rounds, got into the fifth, but that's where the injury came in. I missed six rounds, so there's still so much that I can learn. I was still learning a lot at the time.
Give me an idea, though. You go out in free practice one with a setup that you think is right for that track. Can you come in on lap two and just say, well, something wrong here, not stable, or it's just not responding how I want, or it's too frisky?
I'll be honest with you. The way that I worked with the team last year, I got on the bike and I just rode it. If they wanted to make changes, I let them work off the data, what they could see on the laptop. They have a lot more experience than what I do. So I sort of just sat back and said, I'll ride the bike, and if you want to make changes or feel that we can improve, obviously I give them my feedback. I'm on track with other riders, and I give my feedback to where I feel strong and where I feel we need to improve and where I'm losing compared to others. They'll then look at the data, see if there's anything they can do.
Give me an idea of the sort of things you might say. Would you come in and just say, look, I keep losing the front, or it feels as though it's going to tuck, or it's wheeling too much, or it's just a bit too snatchy on the brakes? What sort of things?
So that could be, you could start off the race weekend, let's say FP1, and maybe you've got the front springs maybe too hard. Obviously, it's the first time you rode a track in a while. You want to build up to a fast speed. And if the suspension is too hard, you need to brake real late and real hard to use the travel for the bike to stop and turn. But obviously in FP1, you're just getting up to speed and then you're struggling. So you come into the team, you say, I feel the front end's a bit too hard. I'm getting no travel. I'm turning into the corners and you're running in wide. They look at the data, look at the travel of the front suspension. And if we're not getting the travel that we need, we'll go softer on the spring.
I mean, will they say, Danny, you need to try harder, mate. You need to go faster.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, they can do that. Yeah, there's been. It depends on how far you are off of. Like everyone knows on each track what lap time is a good lap time and what's a bad lap time kind of thing. So there's a lot of aspects to look into it.
Are you good at setting bikes up, Christian? What sort of things are you changing a lot, or have you got it pretty much set after round two and you only make fine adjustments?
Well, that's always the main goal. If you can it's called your base setting. You know, if you can find a good base setting early, obviously I'm going to be new to the Suzuki. So I'm really looking forward to trying to find that base setting. Once you find that, then from track to track, you make the smaller changes that will allow that bike to work at its optimum.
Just suspension and electronics?
No, it is a little bit of everything, but more or less once you've got your base, once you've got the angles that your chassis works at, your pivot positions, those sort of things, that's where you need to find that base. Obviously, the spring rates and those sort of things and gearing, they're the things that change from track to track, but that's only to work with the different aspects of different tracks. You know, like we have such different tracks in BSB. You know, we go from Thruxton, which is, you know, really fast but undulating. We go to Brands Hatch, which is, you know, a bit of a roller coaster similar to Donington-ish. Then we've got really flat tracks like Snetterton, Silverstone. So we've got a bit of everything sort of thing. So it's a big challenge to make your bike work at all those circuits. So you're always searching for the optimum. It is good when you're out on track with other people because you know where you're able to do things. And, you know, if a rider's in front of you and they're able to just make a turn a bit better, then you know you need to improve in that place. But then you might have a place where you can tell your team, well, we're better in certain places. In previous years, I've used a lot of information from my teammates because I think that's really a good way to try and improve, especially if their setup's a little bit different. Normally what happens is when you change your setup, you'll give, but you'll also take away somewhere else. You know, it's almost...
It can't be perfect for every corner and every lap, can it?
Yeah, so what I mean by that is so rare that you find that golden egg sort of scenario where you go, yes, that's better, and that is the only comment. You know, normally you go, yeah, that's better, but, and there's a but that comes with it. And you work with your engineers non-stop, and on the computer they've got so many parameters they can look at, but the one parameter they can't look at because it's not a real thing is feel. If they had a graph with feel on it, you would win every race, because as long as you've got that feel up to 100%, you know, essentially as a racer, what we want to be able to do is understand what the bike's doing beneath us. And once you know what it's doing beneath you, and once you get that confidence, that's essentially what you're looking for. Car racing is different because basically the most grip you can get, the better. On a motorbike, that's not necessarily the case, because too much grip can then mean you lose feel. And if you lose feel, you lose confidence, because all of a sudden you'll be fired out the seat. You do that a few times, you start to realize that it could bite you at some point. So then the pace decreases. So it's not a simple scenario of making the bike as good as it can be. It's making it as good as it can be for the track, but also so the rider can understand.
For your feeling.
Yeah, what you're doing, it's completely different. You know, you're not necessarily searching for the nth degree of grip. You're searching for something that you can understand and work with.
Can engineers always understand that sort of feedback and that feel that you're so...
I don't know about always understand it. That's why the connection between the rider and the crew chief especially is so important. Once you get almost your own language between the pair of you. Because the trouble is, if a rider says something and the crew chief interprets that comment in a different way, they could be looking for something that's completely opposite to what you're asking for. So you have to be, as a rider, you have to be really clear on what you're saying. I'm quite lucky that I'm reasonably good with the laptop side of things, with the data analysis type of thing. So not that I'll get involved in it, but I can say the comment and then I can pull up the data and click straight to it. So rather than me saying a comment and they have to go and look for it, I can say the comment, show them it, and then go and, you know, allow them to do their job. So it's very different. Every rider works really, really differently.
What about you two guys at the moment? You've admitted you don't know each other so well yet because you're quite new to each other. How ideal is it that you get on with your teammate, and how ideal is it if he rides quite similarly to you?
I've always tried to get on well with my teammates. At the end of the day, like most of our year, we're going to be spending in each other's company, kind of thing, at least every weekend or every other weekend. So, you know, I've always found if you have a better relationship with your teammate, then it just makes the year a bit more fun.
That's the theory, isn't it? I mean, what if you're having very differing fortunes, or you might feel as though the other teammate's getting favoured more? Because it does happen, doesn't it? You know, we've had to have separate garages, haven't we, for teammates at the highest level in the past?
It can happen in racing, that's correct. From my experience, it's sort of normally, like the start of the year, you're kind of equal. You get treated the same. And then I guess sometimes they divert to the person who's maybe fighting for the championship, which I completely understand and agree with. But obviously, as a person, if you see that, you get a little bit deflated, or you can do it. It depends on your personality and how you are as a person. It can happen in racing.
Ever had teammates that you've not got on so well with?
Yeah, definitely.
Go on. What sort of things cause friction? you don't have... I mean, name names if you want, but what sort of things start causing friction?
Competition causes the main friction, but obviously you're in competition with each other. My take on it really is that you should work with your teammate as much as possible until the point... Because let's not forget, you know, there's 33, 34 riders on the grid. So if the two of you can work together to make the best bike possible, then you're going to hopefully have an advantage over 30-odd of the other riders.
Worry about one other.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, my take on it is that until the point when you're both 10 seconds up the road, then you can fight it out, then you can build a wall. But until then, I think you're always better off trying to work with your teammate, bounce off each other, because essentially all the setup that we spoke about takes time. If you can halve the workload, or you know, share the workload, then you know, if you've got different things to try, well, you try one, I'll try the other, and you know, all of a sudden in one session you've done two things rather than one. Doesn't always work out that way. Ego tends to be the main one that gets in the way of it. That tends to be the thing. If a rider believes that they are the number one, and then someone comes in and upsets their team environment, that tends to be the major one. I have been really fortunate. I've had some great teammates. Michael Lavick is probably the standout in terms of easy to work with, you know, very open. I remember really taking him out properly once at Assen when he was my teammate, and I deserved a punch in the face, and he was even too nice to do that. He struggled to even get angry at me, which was frustrating almost in a way. But yeah, he was just such a he was good because he was fantastic at setting a bike up. He was super fast, so he sort of had all the attributes, but he was also happy to try and work together. I am really looking forward to working with Danny. It's nice. It's refreshing that when I signed for the team, he sent me a message straight away. We've had, you know, we've not had much to do with each other through racing. So that's really nice. You know, that to me was really nice message to receive. I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, do you have to spend time being nice with people that you really don't like at all? Do you have to be professional at your level?
That's always better to maintain professional. If someone is really grating on you, maybe sometimes it's better to vent, because then it clears the air often. So, but that's the same as any job, you know, anyone that works in any, even just an office environment, I'm sure there's people that annoy them at the, you know, in the canteen or whatever it is. So that's no different in any job. We're exactly the same. The only difference perhaps is in the race environment. It's a real pressure cooker environment. You know, there's a lot of pressure on not just the riders, like we're only one part of it. You know, the mechanics are under a huge amount of stress and strain. I've had it where mechanics in the past have really fallen out with each other, and we're all supposed to be working together, and just for a moment in time, something will get on top of them. But that's the nature of, you know, human beings. That's how it is. But as I said, you're forced together in a situation like any job. You don't necessarily like each other. It's not necessarily a group of friends, you know, it's a group of people in a working environment, but it's a very pressurized working environment. There's a lot riding on it, you know, there's safety, there's a lot of money riding on it, you know, there's all these different things going on. There's a lot going on, so people fall out every now and again, but because it's such high pressure, it tends to be that it's a moment in time, the air's cleared, and then it's sorted again. Yeah.
How easy is it to enjoy it then with all this sort of pressure? I mean, sometimes it must get to you.
It is often hard to enjoy the riding. I know that me personally, I don't necessarily enjoy the racing that much until afterwards. But I really enjoy riding a bike. I love riding motocross. I love, you know, going doing a bit of trials, whatever it is. That to me is the enjoyment side. The racing side does become a job over time, which is a shame. And it is a shame because also a happy rider is a fast rider. So the more you can enjoy it, the better. But it's always a cycle one way or another. When you're doing well, the enjoyment's there. So it's a positive cycle. But then on the complete contrary, it can also be a real bad spiral the other way. Once it's difficult, you stop enjoying it, becomes more difficult. So it's trying to manage that roller coaster of the race scenario.
Are you as mature as Christian sounds, Danny?
Yes, I'd say I probably am. I think it's probably just I'm a bit younger, but I've had quite a lot of experience traveling the world and working with a lot of different nationalities and talking to a lot of different people. So yeah, I'd say I am. It's hard because racing can be, you know, I've actually had both. I've been on top of the world and I've been right at the bottom. So I've experienced. And it's hard to, you can have a run of bad races and you feel real down. And I think social media as well is a big factor.
Do you get involved with it or do you try and ignore it?
To be fair, I don't post much at all. I look at it, but I don't post much at all. I think it's quite a dark place, social media. You know, I've experienced it in when I'm doing well, I've had people who are my best friends, or I say best friends, are acting like my best friends. They're all for you, but then 3 weeks later, when you've had a bad result, they're the same people which are slating you and saying bad stuff about you.
Do you think attitude is one of the most important attributes to success in racing then? Without the right attitude, you're going to find it hard work by the sound of things.
Yeah, I think if you ask a lot of riders, it does play on your mind when you're reading a lot of bad stuff about you. So which is why I tend to, I go on there, but I just flick through it. I don't post. I try not to give any reason for people to say bad stuff. So,
given how focused and sort of dedicated you need to be good at racing, is there any time to sort of just appreciate stuff outside racing? And I mean, during the season, do you have a beer and a pizza, or is that absolutely off the agenda?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I'm not too strict. As long as I know that I'm putting the work in, you know, I don't mind. I don't mind eating what I want or having a beer.
What about you, Christian?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I went down a really difficult road of being far too sort of like focused on making sure I do the right things, eat the right things. You know, it's funny that like when I was racing Supermoto, I was. Not that I was so good at it, but, you know, everything came so easy. You know, I was young. I was earning a living racing motorbikes. Basically, from nowhere, this career started to happen. Me and my best mate were getting absolutely trolleyed 2 to 3 times a week. I was hardly training. I was winning just about everything I ever...
I think you should go back to that,
shouldn't you? Honestly, but then, and then over time, you sort of... I started to take things more seriously. And it didn't necessarily mean the results got better, but you just sort of started on this, like, oh, I need to do this better. And then over time, it became that I was so focused on making sure that I was only eating certain things and you train exactly this, that, and the other. And it got to a point where actually I think it was detrimental. So you have to sort of find that happy medium. So getting trolleyed 3 times a week isn't the way forward, but also being being so strict also isn't the way forward.
I'm going to ask you to make some sort of predictions now. I mean, who's winning the title this year and who's runner-up of you two? Which of you two is going to be the 2022 BSB champion?
We'd have to go with Christian, wouldn't we?
Okay. You're not happy saying that?
Well, I'm a racer. I go out to win, but I'm also a realist. If I can go out there and win the championship or win races, then okay, I will go and do that. But like I said, I know I haven't got the experience on a big bike and the UK tracks yet to go out there and mount a championship for the whole year. Yes, well, I think I can go to some tracks and win races, but for a championship, I don't think I've got that quite yet. Whereas Christian He's got the experience, he's got the talent.
Why is experience so important? Is it in bike setup? Is it just the mental approach? Why does it count, experience, or is it just the, you know, knowing how to get the best out of that bike and yourself?
Experience, it comes down to sort of knowing, turning up to a race weekend, and at the moment, like, I could go to, let's say, Jerez, Mugello, and I could tell you in each corner there's a bump here, bump there, on around the whole world. Apart from that, now in the UK, I'm still learning a load of different stuff on each track, of small things like that. I still feel like I'm miles away from my potential. It's also having the confidence, because the UK tracks are like no other around the world. I'm used to sort of really wide, fast flowing.
Are they scary, Danny?
For me, it is scary. Yeah. Not only, it's because I'm also used to smaller bikes, slower bikes. And now I've come to the UK tracks where there's not much runoff, and I've got on the fastest bike that I've ever ridden in my life. So it feels that it's coming at you real quick as well, because everything's so close to you. It is scary. Still, I'm yet to ride Cadwell.
At certain tracks like Cadwell and Alton,
yeah,
where perhaps there's some fast stuff with not so much runoff, do you literally feel a bit wary as you're going round? Did you have a bit of a, I must not crash here, attitude?
No, honestly, it doesn't cross my mind at all.
You just go for it.
You're so in the zone.
Yeah.
You're going from point to point and you forget about everything else. And I completely forgot about my hip and forgot about that I crashed.
Was that a massive relief to you?
It was, yeah. It was.
Very important.
For me, yeah. Because like I said before, I've never had a big crash which needed an operation. This has been the first time where a crash has took me away from racing for a long time. So I just didn't know how the hip was going to react if I had enough strength in it. It was a successful day.
What's the approach to a season? Ideally, you need to get points at every round. Ideally, you're on the rostrum or the top of the rostrum at every round. It can't work like that. Do you have to sort of measure yourself a bit and see the season in full? There's no point going mental and risking injury, is there, or bad results early on? Do you have to sort of keep it calm and see the bigger picture?
I mean, it all stems from how your pre-season goes. You know the sort of situation you're in before you get to round one, usually. It's always nice to get a good start to the season. It's different in BSB because obviously we have the showdown system. So that's quite different in how you manage a season. Because ultimately, for the first eight rounds or whatever it is, you're trying to get into a showdown spot. So it's a very different scenario racing in BSB to any other championship where every point counts. That's not the case in BSB. Essentially, as long as you're going to make the showdown at the start of the year, then only podiums count and everything else almost doesn't matter as long as you're in one of those, top eight positions.
Is it a fair system, the showdown, Christian?
Do you know what? It depends if it's worked for you or not. You know, if you, from last season, if you asked Jason O'Halloran if it's a fair system, I know the answer. And if you asked Taryn if it's a fair system, I know the answer's probably contrary. So it works really well if you've had maybe a bit of an issue at the start of the year and lost a load of points, but still make it into the showdown. But then obviously it can work against you if you've had a fantastic pre-end of the season and then the end doesn't go very well. So to me, you race to the rules. So the rules are the rules. I don't necessarily agree or disagree with them. I know why they're done.
Fans, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I
do know that we are a show. Everything that we do is for the show. And I totally get that. So the showdown's one rule that is, it divides opinion. But I'm on the fence with it. I've got a sore bum from sitting on the fence for it. So I'm not one way or another.
Are you just dealing with it? Because it is.
Honestly, the rules are the rules. You know, if whatever the rules were, if we had to all race on knobbly tires, then it's the same for everyone. You know, it doesn't actually make a difference. It might change the end result. I know from when I did British Supersport, which has never had the showdown, if they'd had it when I did British Supersport, I would have been the champion.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
If me granny had wheels, it's as if buts and maybes, it doesn't count. What is a fact is that at the start of the year, we get a a set of rules and you play the game to the rules. So I think sometimes there can be people who it works against, but if there's someone it works against, there always has to be someone it's worked for. Yeah. It's always a one-to-one ratio. So
it's like playing cards, you know.
Yeah, you know, it is. It absolutely is what it is. You know, whatever the rules are, we have to ride to them, play to them. So, yeah, I don't really have too much of a thing. I think for the fans, it is good that when you arrive towards the last round, I've been in a title fight to the last day for the last 2 years, along with, I think 2 years ago, there was 5 lads that could win it in the last round. I think last year there was 4. Maybe a bit less with a realistic chance, but mathematically that was how many it is. If that draws people in, if that brings interest to the sport, you know, then within reason, I am all for it. As long as they don't start playing too much with other things, then, you know, it's fine.
What are your personal aims and ambitions in the championship then, Christian, this year?
Mine is the same as it always is. You know, the aim and ambition is always to be BSB champion. That is humbling to hear a world champion say that he tips me for doing that. I appreciate that comment, but it's funny. I'm a realist. There's a lot of things to happen before that could potentially happen. The first thing for me is getting acquainted with the bike and hoping that I gel with the motorbike. And then, yeah, for me, I always approach it that I try to control the controllables, which is myself, the team around me, how good the bike is, you know, things that are within my... All I can ever do as a racer is turn up and be the best that I can be. What I can't control is how good my opponents and their teams turn up and how good they are. So, and you have to accept that some days, you know, other teams and riders are going to turn up and better than you, and you have to just deal with it and keep focusing on yourself. And as a rider, as long as I give my best and I know I've given my all, I don't tend to be disappointed. I'm only ever disappointed in myself if I think that I've left something on the table. So yeah, the goal is clear. I don't like to say things outwardly because I try to do talking on the track. But I think the goal for any rider, the end goal, it might not be for the season coming, but it's always in a season or two seasons, the end goal is always the same. Every rider has the same aspirations and goal. Mine is exactly what it is. And especially at the point that I'm at now, you know, I've been in BSB enough years now that I do feel like, you know, I've got a job to finish off. I've started a job and I want to finish it, but so does 32 other riders. So,
where do you think, Danny, the GSXR is going to be particularly strong this year? Which tracks and for what reasons?
Well, you just have to look from over the last sort of couple of years, and it's sort of, you can see that Donington, Thruxton, Silverstone.
The fast tracks?
Yeah, sort of fast flowing flat tracks. The Suzuki can win races, that's for sure, and it has won races.
What makes it good on those circuits, do you think?
Well, like I said earlier, the Suzuki is known to be a big 600.
Yep.
Easy, it's not, let's say it's not easy to ride, but it's one of the easier bikes to ride. Change of direction, holds the line really well. I'm super excited that round one is Silverstone. You saw that Kyle did the double there. Gino last year was in the lead group. And for round one, starting the year at a track that we know, I like Silverstone's track that I know well, and I know that the bike works well. I think it's very good to start the year strong. Or I have very high expectations of myself, which then could lead from my mind and to start the year well and to continue on.
When you're in the race, can you study riders' sort of strengths and weaknesses and bike strengths and weaknesses, you know, and know what you're dealing with a lot for the next round? You know, are you taking a lot in from just looking at what others are doing?
Absolutely. I think you're always studying the riders around you, and there's things that you'll come back and tell the team that they're doing that you can't do, or places where you're stronger than them. And you're always you're always working out strengths and weaknesses, and not just of the riders, but also the bikes. It looks like the Suzuki's very good at accelerating with lean angle, where the bike that I've come off, that was its real Achilles heel. So I am looking forward to that. You never know until you sit on them. Yeah, there's so many different parameters to look at, you know.
Is it a bit pointless overthinking it at this
yeah,
stage?
It really
do you need
is.
To just get out there and do
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, from my point of view, even Danny's not done that much time because he, you know, his season was cut short. So we're both actually quite fresh to the Suzuki.
Is that a good thing for you in a way? Are you looking forward to a new challenge?
I'm looking forward to a new challenge big time. You know, I'm really excited by what's to come. And I think as a team, as a manufacturer, and as a pair of teammates, I think we'll be underrated. And in a way, actually, I quite look forward to that.
Well, look, can I sincerely say I thoroughly enjoyed that? In fact, my only gripe is the fact that we can't have lunch and talk for another couple of hours. It's real insight into what makes you guys tick and what racing a BSB bike is all about. So thanks very much to Christian and Danny, and thanks for joining us on the Inside Line. And look forward to seeing you on the next one.